Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Iowa PBS. For more than 45 years, Market to Market has provided perspective on the commodities, from farm gate to dinner plate. Find three new agribusiness podcasts each week, the M2M Podcast, Market Analysis, and Market Plus, all available wherever you subscribe and listen to podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. Sun, warmth, and moisture are exactly what we need right now as we're planting our gardens and landscapes. But, of course, those same elements also help weeds grow. We are going to start the hour off with some advice on weed control. And, of course, later on, you can call and ask your questions, 866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Ajay Nair is here. He is Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Ajay.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. Aaron Stile is also here, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And Ajay is going to start us off in the vegetable garden. And of course, Ajay, we all are so full of hope when we plant that vegetable garden and we can make it clean and clear and we start with no weeds. What should we do at the beginning of the season to set ourselves up for success?
It's an excellent question, Charity. You know, we all start with a lot of enthusiasm when we start our vegetable gardens. But if we neglect taking care of the weeds in the garden, that can be an issue later. So there are several steps which are easy, which can be adopted and easily applied to a vegetable garden. I kind of take it as a three-way approach. You know, the first thing is, you know, for our listeners to understand, you know, how they have weeds in their gardens. So why do the weeds come in every year? So just to understand that, you know, weeds can come through wind, birds can disperse that. There are two types of weeds, you know, some that are annual and some that are perennial. So the perennials will keep showing up. So that's one, you know, knowing how they come in. The second is to identify their weeds. There are several weeds.
To know what they are, Ajay. I can't just get rid of them.
So, I mean, some are very common. For example, purslane, lamb's quarter, red root pigweed. The reason I brought the point of knowing them is that some weeds show up at a certain time of the year. For example, from now, from May 10, May 20, woolly cupgrass, this is the time when it shows up. Anytime after, like, the middle, later part of May is when giant foxtail shows up. So this is maybe a little bit extra for our listeners, but good to know when to expect those weeds.
And then I'm convinced. And then, okay.
And then finally, you know, we also need to be ready for them. You know, if you did a good job last year, doesn't mean that weeds won't come up this year. They will absolutely be there. Talk about perseverance, continuity, and commitment. Weeds are the perfect example of that. They will show up every year. So some ways you can manage the weeds. There are, you know, cultural techniques or, you know, more organic forms of managing the weeds. For example, hoeing. Which is like disturbing the soil, very shallow, maybe 1 inch or 2 inch depth. Hand weeding, that's a perfect management tool to manage weeds in home gardens. And finally, cultivation. You can cultivate too. Chemicals are also an option, but, you know, I always keep it as a backup. But primarily hoeing, hand weeding, and using mulches is the best way to manage weeds.
Okay. And now we want to start off good, you know, and we want to keep up, but a lot of us are not going to actually keep up. Ajay, I know this about myself, and I know that I am not entirely alone. So when things get a little bit out of control, what can you do?
So as I indicated earlier, you know, make sure the gardens are clean by hoeing around your vegetable garden, around your plant. We try to manage the weeds very early before they even, you know, emerge out of the ground. So we call it the white thread stage of the root. So if you keep, you know, once a week hoeing around your plants, that's an excellent strategy to begin with. If the weeds escape, and it will happen, as you indicated, Charity, hand weeding, you know, just going out there and pulling those weeds that are showing up, that's a good way to keep ahead of them. That's also a good way. And some homeowners might, you know, want to use some kind of a chemical control. In that case, there are some pre-emergent herbicides that are available. One of the most common one is called Preen, trifluralin, also known as Treflan. It's a pre-emergent weed control, so that takes care of the weeds which have not emerged. So that could also be a strategy.
Well, and of course, when you want to use a chemical in your vegetable garden, that's something you have to be incredibly careful about, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why I said, I mean, that's my backup plan. I mean, the last option I would go to, if I can manage the weeds by hoeing, by hand weeding, and using mulches. I mean, we see that quite regularly in home gardens, the use of organic mulches, for example, you know, grass and lawn clippings, you know, compost, shredded leaves, wood chips, sawdust. I mean, those are good ways to manage weeds. So those will be my primary tools to manage weeds, and the chemicals will be, you know, my last option.
Do you have a favorite mulch system that you like to employ?
So I have used grass clippings in my own yard. They do a great job because they decompose quickly, so they can provide some nutrients too. You have to keep up with them. But sometimes what I do is I take a you know, two-tier approach. So grass clippings, and I also use, you know, wood chips. That also prevents weeds and also conserves moisture, especially in the months of July and August when it could get really hot. Though, you know, this joint approach, this is what I've used, and it definitely works.
Now, I have a lot of weeds that grow in my garden. I just have a great seed bank of weeds in my garden. And so I've used a few different approaches over the years in my desperation, like trying to put down cardboard and, you know, obviously not where I've planted the plants, but to put down cardboard and mulch or paper and mulch, something that will eventually biodegrade, but the water might gradually move through, that kind of thing. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's also a good approach. You know, many homeowners do that. They use cardboard boxes, and it also cardboard like panels. It also helps to deplete the nutrients that are available in the perennial weeds. They are not able to emerge, so that's one way of slowly choking them off. So that definitely works, and it'll be good. You know, if you have a piece of plot where you are not growing your vegetables, let's say for a few months, you can put that cardboard in there or newspaper in there, and then so that you are prepping that piece of land so that the weeds are not there when you are actually going to plant, maybe in the fall or so. So the cardboard can be used in that way as well.
All right. And if you have emerged from the pandemic without a whole lot of cardboard in your house, you're a better person than most of us, I think.
That's true. I mean, I think the Amazon Prime has delivered many boxes to our household, so we definitely have a good stack of that.
Absolutely. Well, all right. If you have questions about weeds in your vegetable garden, of course, Ajay can answer those. And Aaron, let's move on to some of the other areas in our landscape. And I'm thinking about some of the perennial gardens or the landscaping that we might do around our homes. What do we do to set ourselves up for success with preventing weeds there?
Well, one of the things to keep in mind is that every time you work or turn the soil, you have the potential of bringing up new seeds, kind of disturbing or kind of replenishing that seed bank. And so trying to avoid, you know, excessive soil cultivation, especially in these areas that don't really require it, can help a lot to prevent new seeds from being turned up and then being allowed to germinate. Mulches are probably the best thing to do in these spaces and to help kind of smother out weeds. Mother Nature covers bare soil with plants. So if you don't cover the soil with something, there will be weeds every time without fail. So that's why mulch can be so effective in this.
And what do you think about landscape cloth?
I am not a huge fan of landscape cloth. And the reason why is, so it has its uses. It can be really nice in certain situations, like when you're putting a patio down and you're trying to put a weed barrier so that you don't have as much coming up maybe between the bricks and things like that, or a gravel path, something like that. But every time I have seen landscape fabric, it has eventually, enough organic matter on top of it to grow weeds. So it is not a permanent weed solution. And it very, very rarely breaks fully down, and it separates the organic mulch and things that you're putting on top of the soil from the rest of the soil. And so you lose a lot of the other benefits that mulch can provide apart from weed suppression, like improving soil structure and nutrition. So I'm not a huge fan. I also have noticed, especially with organic mulches, when you put it on landscape fabric, it's more likely to wash or blow off.
Mm-hmm. And
then you just see the landscape fabric. And if you're trying to plant something and you run into it, it's just, yeah, not one of my favorite things.
All right. So if you have skipped the landscape fabric and you're going with mulch, then how often do you mm-hmm. have to renew that mulch? You have to maintain that.
You do. And most of the time, every other year or so, putting a fresh layer on top, many gardeners will put a little bit on every year, kind of have like a spring or a fall ritual of going in and adding kind of a fresh coat on top. Because this stuff, of course, you're using organic mulches, it breaks down over time. It's adding to the soil structure. It's improving soil. Eventually it would be gone if you're not adding to it. So kind of doing a little bit. I like to do it in early spring or late fall because the plants have died back or haven't emerged yet. So it's a lot easier to get in there and get around and get everything spread out nice and evenly so that it looks nice for your garden plants to come up through.
And of course, there will be some people who would like to go the chemical route, and you're not usually eating mm-hmm. something from this kind of garden. Mm-hmm. So that can be an option for people who choose to go that direction, right?
It can be. You have to be careful because many of the chemicals that we use to control weeds are also going to adversely affect our garden plants. So a lot of times we have a couple options. We have a non-selective herbicide. This is just going to kill any green tissue that it touches. So you have to be careful when you're applying that. You have to either spot spray or use a sponge, or I know folks who use like a bucket or a cardboard box to cover up the plant that they don't want to damage so that there's no drift or overspray, making sure you're doing it on a calm day, which sometimes is hard to find, it seems lately, but making sure you're doing it on a calm day so that you don't get that drift and adversely impact your wanted plants.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. Ajay Nair is here, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Iowa PBS. For more than 45 years, Market to Market has provided perspective on the commodities from farm gate to Dinner Plate. Find three new agribusiness podcasts each week, the M2M Podcast, Market Analysis, and Market Plus, all available wherever you subscribe and listen to podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll start off with some email questions here. This is from Emily in State Center. For you, Aaron, I have a row of peonies. They're about 5 years old. One of them hasn't shown any growth above the soil line. I assumed it hadn't survived the winter. When I went to dig a hole to replace it, I discovered the roots intact, firm, and tiny little white and green growths starting all underground. Do you think it will survive? And why would this one peony be so delayed?
Probably a wide range of things that might have kept it delayed. Over time, depending on how deep or shallow it was planted, it might have emerged more slowly as a result, especially if it was really deep in the ground. The soil surface will heat up much faster. And so that might play a role in it. And it's easy for us to accidentally bury these long-term, peonies are very long-term in our gardens. So over time, the soil does build up on top of them. And sometimes they get a little bit deeper. If it has less sun, it might have been slower to emerge. If it was just a smaller plant, it was just a there's quite a few different reasons that could have kept it from emerging. But if it's green, it's still alive and it should come up. It might come up a little bit later this year and bloom a little bit later, but that's okay.
Interesting. Well, and it looks like peonies are on track for Memorial Day this year. I know that means a lot to a lot of people, so it's exciting. Yes. At least the ones in my yard look like they're on track. I think others I've seen are actually a little ahead of mine. Here's a question for you, Ajay, from Russ. If I want to plant sweet peppers and tomatoes, can I intermingle them? Pepper, tomato, pepper, tomato.
Absolutely. You can intermingle them. Both of these crops are, you know, they don't, they are self-fertilizing crops. They don't need pollen from any other plant. It's all self-contained. And it's your choice. I mean, you can plant intermingle in the same row or maybe have two rows. Just keep in mind that the spacing for these plants could be different. For example, tomatoes. If you are planting an indeterminate type, that plant will grow bigger. It definitely needs more space. And peppers, typically, you know, they are planted in a row with two in the row so that they can support each other. So keep that in consideration when planting the spacing aspect. But otherwise, yes, they can be planted together.
All right. And here's one for you, Aaron. We've had several raspberry patches that produce well for several years, but after that, they begin to die from the middle out and are replaced by Creeping Charlie. Why is this happening and how can it be prevented? How soon can we replant raspberries in the spots that lost plants?
So most raspberries, well, there are two types of raspberries. Some of the plants that we have will produce will grow 1 year, and then the second year produce a flower and fruit, and then that cane dies back to the ground. If you have these kind of biennial producers, you always have some canes that are vegetative and some that are flowering and fruiting. So there's always raspberries, but not every cane is going to have them. So if these canes are dying after they're flowering and fruiting, that's fairly normal. And typically raspberries will spread by underground runners. If you want to fill in that area, you can plant it. I mean, spring's a good time to plant those things. So you could fill in those areas anytime. Keeping the weeds down in that area can be a little difficult. Good mulching and hand pulling is probably your best option for raspberry patches.
All right. And another one for you, Ajay. This is from Christopher in Des Moines. When should I plant seed and transplants? Rain and the chance of thunderstorms are forecast for every day from Friday to Friday. So should I take my chances and do both now? The rain could be great. Thunderstorms could be terrible. Or hold off another week until the much needed precipitation has passed.
Yeah, I would actually take advantage of the precipitation. I don't think so. It'll be, if the transplants are good quality transplants, they can definitely take some beating with the wind. But yeah, the rain will be definitely helpful in making them that they establish quickly, and the transplant shock to those transplants is low. When it comes to seeds, obviously, if you're seeding, make sure you know the seed is in the ground and not on the top of the soil, so that it just washes away. So that needs to be taken care of, but otherwise I would take advantage of this.
All right, let's go to the phones. Tony is on the line in Fonda. Hi, Tony.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a twofold question. My daughter just rounded up an area where she wants to plant perennials, and it's died out. Now she's going to be planting perennials. As far as the preen, can she put that after she plants or before she plants, or does it depend on what perennial that she plants, whether will that harm the root system? My second question would be, when planting trees, people use augers. Does the shape of the hole matter? Like if they dig a conical, square, auger, does that affect the roots?
Sure.
So I can talk about the preen, and maybe Aaron can address the tree question here. Preen is a pre-emergent herbicide, you know, trifluralin or treflan. It's also known as those names. And since you're planting a perennial, it doesn't matter if you want to apply it initially or after planting. That's fine. It's a pre-emergent herbicide, so it will kill or limit many of the weeds that are just emerging or will emerge later. one has to take into consideration that if they were planting, like, for example, their vegetable or something also as a seed, in that case, I would not apply preen and then plant my vegetable seed. So in this case, it's a perennial. You can apply it before or after. Both cases should be fine.
Okay. That'll eliminate a lot of my weed seed then. Okay. Thank you.
All right. And the tree question?
Yeah, in terms of the shape of the hole, digging a hole that's not too deep so that the plant doesn't settle down in is going to be really important. And often having a nice kind of flat bottom so that the root ball doesn't either shift or settle down. If you had a cone-shaped hole, you could see something like that happening in terms of the plant settling down in that hole, which is, especially for trees, is going to be bad news long term. So a nice flat, solid base is good for those plants, and wider is better. And the edge of the hole can be a little bit irregular. That actually, there's a lot of gardeners who really swear by the idea if you have a like really kind of jagged edge, it's a little bit easier for the roots to kind of establish into the surrounding soil from that root ball than it would be if it was just like a really sheer and smooth edge. Wider is better. We want as much kind of loose soil for that root, the roots in that original root ball to go out into the surrounding soil and get established. And most of the roots go out, not down. So it's that's why the wide hole is so good.
All right, Tony, thanks so much for your call. Next up, Bev is on the line, 866-780-9100. Bev is from Ottumwa. Hi, Bev. Hi, Bev.
Yes, I have a question about, I have wild onions in my yard, and I have tried to get rid of them, but I just can't seem to, and I will take my answer off the air.
All right, wild onions. Do you want to take those, Aaron?
Yes, these are very frustrating weeds. I have encountered them myself. Wild onions, garlic grass, onion grass, they're all very similar plants. And what makes these plants so difficult to deal with is that little underground bulb. So they do have that bulb. They snap off very easily if you try to hand pull. And because they have this bulb underground, it takes a lot of herbicide, if you want to go that route, to finally get rid of all of this plant. And so that's what makes them so frustrating. Yeah. Typically, the best way to get rid of this is to go out with a trowel, or if it's a big enough, they do grow in little clumps typically. So you can go out with a shovel or a trowel, get the whole thing. Don't try to save any of the soil because you'll inevitably leave behind a bulb or two and that will resprout. Get rid of it and then replace it with some new topsoil. And if it's, the hole is big enough, seed the lawn again to help cover up that bare patch that's left.
So very, very tenacious and frustrating invader.
It is very tenacious, yes.
All right. Let's go next to Carol in Des Moines. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I have two questions. Number one, I used cardboard last year, and I put it right close around the base of each of my plants. And several of those plants died. So number one, did my cardboard smother the roots of those plants? My second question is, I did not cut off the mop heads of my hydrangeas. I don't know what kind of hydrangeas they are, so I don't know if I should cut off those dead mop heads now or whether that might be a problem. And I will take my answer off the air.
Before you go, Carol, what kind of plants did you put the cardboard up next to?
All of my plants, and some of them died, so I can't think of it. It's asp. It starts with ASP, and it's a ferny, beautiful seafoam green plant.
Okay, so things that you were planting in your landscape or in your perennial garden?
In my perennial garden, yes. And so several of them died, and I had never used cardboard before, and they came back year after year, and I killed, somehow, three of them died.
Oh, frustrating. All right, Aaron, what do you think? Was the cardboard the problem?
Well, sometimes cardboard can wick a lot of moisture away, especially if it's really close to the original root ball of the perennial or whatever it was that she had planted there. You could have been watering, but a lot of that water wasn't actually getting to that plant, that newly planted plant. And so then that root ball dried up and caused the plant to die. So kind of pulling the cardboard a little bit further away and making sure that you're doing a good job of watering that original root ball, especially on those newly transplanted things, will probably make a big difference with that.
All right. And then the second question about deadheading the hydrangea?
Yeah, the hydrangea. Eventually those dead flowers will fall off, but you can cut them off if you don't like the way they look, and you could do that now.
All right. It's not too late. Let's go next to Jeff on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
I've just gotten burned so many times growing grass in Iowa in the springtime. And like the question before, the guy's answer was correct. It's best to take advantage of the rain because there's nitrogen in the rain. But I've been trying to germinate grass seed, bluegrass seed, and it gets too cold at night. It's too dodgy. Who knows? We might even get snow. I mean, you know.
It's possible. It's happened
before. They even have snow just last week in Hawaii on top of a volcano. I mean, give me a break.
All right. So you're wondering what you should do to maximize the possibility that your grass seed will actually grow. Aaron.
Mm-hmm. So it's very tempting to start a new lawn seed in the spring. And if you have a lot of bare ground, it's worth the effort to do it in the spring to help hopefully head off some of the weeds. But the best time to establish new grass is actually late summer, early fall. The soil temperature is a lot warmer, so the seed germinates really quickly. And then we go back into a cool fall season, which the grass appreciates better. So first part of September is often a really good time to do the bulk of new lawn establishment. So I will fill in little bare spots in the spring, but I'm going to do most of my major lawn renovation and replanting in the fall. And so there's a lot less weed pressure in the fall as well. So that's why it's recommended for that time. So I would try establishing grass, planting it in late August, early September, still watering as needed and all of that stuff. Hopefully I'll have much better success.
Yeah. And just to add to Aaron's point here, I mean, if you decide to plant in a seed in the spring, you really have to baby them. I mean, the rain is good, but that rain will be gone, and then the soil is again going to dry. So you have to really keep up on top, especially with the moisture and watering them regularly, for almost 2 weeks to make sure that proper emergence happens. So if you do that, yeah, you have to really water them in well.
Yeah, that's true. New turf in particular is a good example of like the only thing that we would recommend watering frequently and shallow. Normally we recommend watering deeply and infrequently, but not when establishing new grass.
Well, and Jeff, you sound frustrated enough that I think waiting for August is a really, really good idea as a non-horticulture expert, but time to try something different. Good luck, Jeff. Here is a question from Lee in Iowa City. He says, this is not a weed question, but definitely a pest question. I believe voles ate the roots of my hostas this winter. I noticed holes at the ground surface and the plant sunken into the ground. I dug up one of the hostas and the roots were clearly chewed with 75% of the plant gone compared to what was there last year. Is there any way to deter them from eating my hostas? I live in a wooded area, so I imagine this is going to be a perennial issue. I've heard maybe cayenne pepper. Well, which one of you wants to tackle this one? I know neither of you are animal behavior specialists, but... all the takers.
So
Aaron, go ahead.
One of the things that I would probably look into is in the fall, if you have plants that you've noticed have been targeted over the last several years, or you have plants that are really valuable, the easiest thing to do will probably be to put a cylinder of hardware cloth around that plant, whatever it might be, to help. And you'd have to bury it about maybe 2 or 3 inches so that the voles don't burrow underneath. Typically, if they run into this in the middle of winter, they're just going to go around it. And it'll help prevent some of that damage. In most cases, especially with things like rodents, the best prevention of damage is through exclusion with some kind of physical barrier. And so using hardware cloth could work well for this vole issue.
All right. And of course, that's difficult to do, but...
It is a lot of work. It is a lot of work. But if the plants are really valuable to you, it's worth it.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You can join the conversation with your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, and Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
If you own a business or run an organization, consider using IPR as part of your marketing strategy. Let us show you how to reach our loyal radio audience, advertise on our digital platforms, and even sponsor your favorite podcast. Spread the word about your business and support IPR at the same time. It's a win-win. Learn more at iowapublicradio.org/sponsors.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Aaron Stile, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames, is here, along with Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And we've got a vegetable question for you, Ajay. This is from Jade in Okoboji. Hi, Jade.
Good morning, happy people. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I didn't think things through when I applied Snapshot, a pre-emergent, to my flower garden. And a couple weeks later, my wife decided that she wanted to put peppers and tomatoes down in there. Is this going to be a counterproductive thing? Is it even going to be safe to eat the vegetables? Any thoughts?
So, Jade, when was the pre-emergent applied? I mean, how many weeks or days before you are planning to plant or already planted the transplants?
I applied Snapshot maybe 2 weeks ago and have not planted the plants yet.
Okay, yeah. So in that case, it should be okay if you are starting your vegetables with transplants. You said tomatoes and peppers. Most of these pre-emergents are, effective for like 3 to 4 weeks. And after that, you know, they slowly start waning down. And since you are planting transplants and not seeds, it's totally fine to go ahead and plant your tomatoes and pepper transplants after you have applied the pre-emergent herbicide. So you're totally fine.
Super. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. All right. We've got another animal question here, but we're going to give it a try, Aaron. Patricia is on the line in northern Missouri. Hi, Patricia.
Hello. Good morning, Charity. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
I have a horrible problem. I live on a farm in north central Missouri, and I tried to plant anything. This year it's a lot of perennials, and the darn raccoons have come and dug up everything. They didn't do it the night I planted. The little sneaky dogs came the next night and uprooted every single perennial that was planted in a bed, perennials that were planted in concrete pots at the base of the porch, etc. So my question is, what can one do to run off raccoons short of killing them? Because is there any sort of something natural from the kitchen you could sprinkle on the top of the dirt? Is there something systemic? Do I need to chicken wire my whole front yard?
Patricia, I actually have a lot of raccoon experience, so I'll let Aaron give his answer in just a second. But one of the things that I would suggest you try is one of those motion detection lights in this area, because they don't like the bright light. And if it pops on when they're there, I think that might be enough to deter them. But Aaron, do you have any other ideas?
Well, as I kind of mentioned earlier with voles, most of these animal pests, the most effective control to prevent damage is with exclusion. So, and raccoons aren't the only things. It's actually really common for things like ground squirrels or chipmunks to dig up newly planted plants too. It's just a thing that they love doing for some reason. So, laying chicken wire, even if it's just temporarily until the plants get a little more established over this area, can help. The problem with, you can put up a small fence, but most of these things can easily get over that small fence. So you'd have to kind of lay it kind of gently over the top. Walking on it or touching it's not going to be very pleasant, so they're more likely to leave it alone as a result of that. You could also look into the really smelly stuff to see if that would repel them. So the kinds of repellents that have rotten egg smell or those kinds of things. What won't likely work are the ones that use taste. So a lot of the ones that have like cayenne pepper, as an example, are meant for those things that are browsing and they taste it and they don't like it. It doesn't sound like these animals are actually eating any of these plants. They're just digging them up. And so your goal here is to just make it so unpleasant in the area that they'll leave it alone. So that could be another option. It is very frustrating to have this happen. Often, if you can just change the pattern or the habit or just get it there long enough so that the plant can get established, you can remove the chicken wire after several weeks. But right at the beginning, it can be helpful.
All right, Patricia, I hope that helps. And we had a helpful listener share the Humane Society of the United States Humane Wildlife Conflict Mitigation Guide on Twitter. So I have retweeted that. If you want to look for at Charity Nebbe and look at that guide, you can also, I'm sure, find that pretty easily online. But yeah. I'd try the bright light, too. They don't tend to like that. That's one of the pieces of advice for if they get into your attic is just to make it really bright. So if it's a motion sensitive light, that probably shouldn't bother you too much and may discourage some activity. If it indeed was raccoons, that's the other question. Mm-hmm. All right. Kathy's on the line next in Davenport. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you today?
Good. What's your question?
Yeah. I just planted new strawberry seedlings, and I notice a lot of times in the commercial businesses, they use like some type of straw or hay to use mulching. I was wondering if grass clippings would be okay to use instead.
What do you think, Ajay?
Yes.
Oh.
yeah, Aaron, you can go and then I can add a few things.
Well, that's it. Yes, I think it would be.
Okay.
Yeah. So one thing to be careful about if you're using grass clipping is that that grass clipping should not have been treated with a broadleaf herbicide, for example, 2,4-D, because then that can affect the growth of the strawberry or even damage it. So if 2,4-D was used or some kind of broadleaf herbicide was used on the grass, at least mow that grass like two or three times before you use that grass clipping. So that is something to consider.
Okay. If that was put down in the fall and then we use grass clippings from, starting to mow this spring, should I take that grass off that I have out there now?
I mean, if there was no herbicide applied, you should be okay. You can use that grass clipping.
Yeah. Even if the herbicide was applied
in the fall,
probably been long enough.
Yeah, I think what Aaron is mentioning is, since it was in the fall, the chemical would have already broken down, so it should be fine.
All right, Kathy, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got John in Cedar Falls. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. I really love your show.
Thanks.
So I have a quite a bit of clover now taking over small patches in my yard, and I didn't want to use Roundup and get rid of it and kill the lawn. What is a couple of different ways to approach getting rid of clover?
Aaron?
So you can hand pull. That's an option. That would be the non-chemical option. It's just go in and selectively hand pull or hand dig out those patches that you want to get rid of. The other thing you can use is a broadleaf herbicide. So anything that has like Ajay just mentioned, 2,4-D, dicamba, triclopyr, all of those things will kill the clover but leave the grass alone. So that's another option.
And just to add to Aaron's point, the best time to manage some of these broadleaf weeds is to, you know, make sure you apply the broadleaf herbicide in the fall. Based on the advice I got from my colleagues, you know, Adam Tomes, Dr. Nick Christians, you know, I have it on my calendar that I have to apply a broadleaf herbicide sometime in October, end of October, beginning November, and then I usually apply two times, so in a two-week interval, and that definitely helps to keep the broadleaf down.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. And now this could possibly be another clover question, but with a very different spin. Ajay, this is from Sarah in Des Moines. She says, are there cover plants or cover crops that help suppress weeds in a vegetable garden? The area where I'm planting vegetables used to have a lot of vinca vine in it. Should I keep some of those plants in place around the vegetables, or will they compete too much for resources?
I would not keep the plants, the vinca, for example, too close to your vegetable plant, because definitely it will compete for resources, for nutrients, for water. Yes, there are, you know, clovers, for example, crimson clover, red clover, that are used between the rows to suppress weeds, because these clovers, since they are legumes, they fix atmospheric nitrogen, so they add nitrogen to the soil. So clovers have their place in vegetable production or in your gardens, but yeah, don't have these plants too close to your crop or your plant, because they will deprive plants of nutrients and water.
All right. And here's another. We've got some derecho-related questions for you, Aaron. This one's from John in Marion. He says, my 30-foot-tall hackberry was hit by the derecho. It's now leaning about 30 degrees. The roots are not exposed. Can it be straightened?
Oh, it probably can't be very easily straightened. And so you're going to probably want to have an arborist come out and evaluate the overall health of the tree. Have somebody put eyes on it and make recommendations. It may be best, depending on what the condition is, to remove it and replace it with something new. Or it may be in a situation where it would be fine, even if it's leaning a little bit and is still structurally sound. But straightening it's not likely an option.
All right. I've got two more tree questions for you. You're going to wish Mark Vitash was here. But the next one is from Julia. The majestic pin oak in our front yard is bigger around than my arms will hug and 50 feet tall. It's been fine, miraculously, until now. Only within the last couple of years has it begun to show telltale signs of chlorosis. What is the best method for helping our big pin oak?
Oh, there's, chlorosis alone isn't likely going to kill the tree, but it is rather unsightly and it is stressful, which can make it more prone to other potential issues. There are applications of kind of iron chelate products or that can help. Sometimes they're injected into like the trunk, and sometimes they're sprayed onto the tree. This tree is way too big for it to be sprayed directly on the tree.
Yeah.
But you can buy them. You basically kind of pound them into the trunk, and it provides the iron that's missing. The reason why we have this chlorosis on these plants is not because there's not enough iron in the soil. It's because the pH of the soil is too high to make the iron available for this tree to use. And so you kind of bypass this by using an iron chelate kind of product to give the tree that iron that it needs to get rid of the chlorosis.
All right, and you're doing great. Your third tree question. This one's from Mark. I have several arborvitae trees that are drooping because of an ice storm this winter. Will they straighten up eventually? Should I tie them up? What would you recommend?
They may straighten up. A lot of times, snow and ice damage can kind of bend, but eventually the plants kind of recover, although sometimes they may not fully get back to what they were before. If there's any damage, that would prevent them from, you know, like slight kind of ripping or tearing wherever they kind of come together. You could tie them up if you really wanted to, but that can't stay on long term. So you have to have a plan for removing it. It should not be on that any much longer than a growing season, if you wanted to try that.
All right. We do have time for maybe one more question. 866-780-9100. Mark is on the line in Urbandale. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Thank you for your show.
Yeah. What's your question?
I have a question about seeds, about vegetable seeds. Should I buy new seeds every year, or what's the, is there a rule of thumb of how, you know, the probability of an older seeds germinating, or just some thoughts about that? Because I put some in this year, about 4 or 5 years old, and nothing came up. It was squash and cucumber.
All right. What do you think, Ajay?
Yeah, so most of the seeds, when they are sold nowadays, if you look at the germination percentage, they are pretty high, you know, 90-95%. But in terms of storage, I typically would recommend not to store them for more than 1 to 2 years. And that also if you store properly, because one, they should not be in a place where there's humidity, because as you know, seeds imbibe moisture and that starts deteriorating them. I mean, the germination will go down. So if you can store them in a cool, dry place, 1 to 2 years. And after that, I think the viability starts going down.
All right, Mark, thanks a lot for your call. So probably buying fresh is a good idea, is what you're saying, Ajay.
Yes, I would say if they're 3-4 year old, I would lean more towards buying fresh, because these are annuals and you don't want to miss the opportunity of growing the vegetable this year.
Right. You don't want to play a lottery where your odds are not that great. All right, here's a question from Craig. It's a two-part question. The first part is going to make you laugh. He says, why are dandelions doing so well this year? Aaron?
Dandelions are pretty tenacious plants. We've had a very dry and kind of rough spring, so the grass hasn't been as happy. And I think dandelions in some part are kind of taking advantage of some of that.
Well, and I also, maybe this is a personal theory, but there are a lot of people who are being more careful and thoughtful about lawn chemicals. It feels like more people are embracing dandelions. Maybe that's just where I live. But what do you think about that, Aaron?
That could be too. They are very effective at spreading seed and populating themselves in everybody's yard. So if fewer people are eradicating them, then yeah, there's definitely more seed out there and more likely to see more of them.
All right, Craig. Ajay.
Charity, just to add to that, you know, in my lawn they are doing great too this year, and that's because my daughter loves to get hold of that seed head and blow into it and
so
see
it
go.
So
see it fly away. I said, "Oh, don't blow on it," but she would like, "Oh no, I like it to fly." I said, "Okay, go ahead."
Well, and she gets a wish granted every time she blows all of the seeds off of that dandelion. So don't stop her wishes. Come on, Ajay. Craig also wants to know if it's too late to put on crabgrass control.
It might be a little late. Typically, we want to get that on just as the crabgrass is germinating. And for many of us, that was a couple weeks ago. But take a look at the soil temps in your area. There's a great website on Iowa State's page that lists them by county. If they are still kind of in the upper 50s or low 60s, then it might be worth putting it on.
All right. Aaron Style, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Ajay Nair, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Ajay Nair, Associate Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Aaron Style, Assistant Director of Ryman Gardens in Ames. We will be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday here on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.